The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good day. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Thank you for hanging with us. Hope you all had a fabulous weekend. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, I'm Molly Cameron-Rose. Gentlemen, we ready to do this?
Let's do it.
Every day.
All right, let's go. The Bucks one game away from hoisting a Larry O'Brien trophy. But let's talk about some of the highlights, fellas. Max, how about the Drew Holiday steal and then the alley-oop? Unreal, right?
It was a great play by Drew Holiday, and he credited team defense. Stephen A., he's right about that. I love the fact that they went for it. They went for the win. Fortune favors the bold,
yes,
right?
Sir.
They were going for it. They were trying to score. Good for them. But Stephen A. Smith, the thing that blew my mind was the Chris Paul foul. Mm. That was such a blunder. That's an all-time. If the Suns go on to lose this series, oh, my God. Like, I'm kind of rooting for them to in game six just because they can't go out like that. Stephen A., he's... If you're going to foul, which is a stupid thing to do because you can't stop him at that point, you got to make sure that he doesn't score. And by the way, he's up in the air. It's a dangerous foul. But if you just don't foul, it's a one-possession game with 15 seconds left. You have the ball. Well, you could get to overtime pretty easily in that situation. By fouling, you are begging for it to be a two-possession game with 15 seconds left. For all intents and purposes, that's the end of the game. It was boneheaded on so many levels, and to occur in that situation, in that moment, that leverage was unreal to me. I really hope Chris Paul has a great game six. His legacy needs it.
Well, I'm praying that he does as well, but as important as that play was, and I certainly don't try to diminish from that, Max Kellerman, the bottom line is when the big three are playing, they played like a big three on Saturday. Middleton had 29, and his mid-range game is just pure. That's the name, that's the word that comes to my mind. Just pure, silky, smooth. Amari Hardwick from Power was texting me during the game talking about how, you know, just Middleton's mid-range game is something special to behold. That definitely enters your mind. Drew Holiday having 27 points and 13 assists. He's playing spectacular basketball on both ends of the floor. He deserves a lot of credit. When the big three do something like that, they are a big three. They definitely are not a fake big three. Make no mistake about it. And that's what we saw Saturday night. Certainly the play by Chris Paul and a turnover prior to that by Devin Booker. It's amazing that the way that he played, dropping 40 points, playing the way that he's been playing, trying to offset what Milwaukee was throwing at them, that it came down to those two. Booker turning the ball over. And then CP3 committing that foolish foul because he certainly didn't need to do that, because if Giannis had got the breakaway dunk, alley-oop, and it was just that, they still would have been within three and had the potential to tie it. But to me, what really, really stands out in my mind, I came into this game thinking about Cameron Johnson and how they needed to get him playing time and they need him to get him the ball. The guy played 21 minutes, took three shots, made two. I lost count, Max, at how many times he was open, and neither CP3 nor Devin Booker got him the basketball. Now, I was offset to some degree by Booker because Booker would look him off and then go and do his own thing, and most of the time he made the basket. So it was offset by that. But Cameron Johnson definitely deserved more shots than he got, and I also thought that was pivotal to the outcome.
Stephen A., in the moment of truth, though, you're right. Booker was going to play hero ball. The Milwaukee Bucks knew it, and they stripped them because Drew Holiday is a heads-up type player. You're right about that. You got to move. You got to spread it around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we saw their resiliency on the road, 16-point comeback. Guys, let's keep going. So game six is tomorrow. Milwaukee can close it out on their home floor and claim their first NBA championship since 71 when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was leading the charge. Stephen A. Smith, is this series already over?
I believe it is. I believe it is. I have to be consistent with what I said prior to game five on Saturday. Friday, when we were on the air, I said, Milwaukee's not losing game six. So if you're the Phoenix Suns, you need to win game five so you can ultimately force a game seven. They did not do that. And as a result, I think that the Milwaukee Bucks closed this out Tuesday night, and they end up winning their first championship since the 70s. Giannis Antetokounmpo, I just can't say enough about the guy. Still doesn't have a perimeter shot, obviously. Still struggles with his free throws. But the hard work, the dedication, the focus, the tenacity, the fact that he galvanizes guys around him and brings them together. He lifts them. He uplifts them. He doesn't tear them down. He does things that stars are supposed to do. And to consider the fact that this guy signed with Milwaukee and stayed there, got $245 million in the process, for them to acquire Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, although they were assisted because a guy like Kyrie Irving gets hurt, because if Kyrie Irving hadn't gotten hurt, I do believe that Brooklyn would be in the finals instead of Phoenix. No question about that. But in the end, it doesn't take away from what we've seen the Milwaukee Bucks do. Chris Middleton's game, again, his mid-range game is pure. And not only that, he closes. And Jrue Holiday, we always know him as an elite defender. But to have 27 points and 13 assists in that pivotal game five on a row speaks volumes for him and what he brings to the table. The Milwaukee Bucks are bigger. They are stronger. They are more athletic. They are deeper. And really, it's the heroics of Devin Booker, along with contributions, whether it's CP3, Mikal Bridges, or somebody in and out. You know, that's kept this series interesting. But the better team is ahead right now, just simply because they're bigger, stronger, more athletic, deeper, etc. I'm not saying that there's no way in hell that Phoenix can't overcome this, but it looks quite daunting, to say the least. And if I got to bet my money, I'm betting it on Milwaukee closing this series out tomorrow night at the Fiserv Center, at the Fiserv Forum. I think it's over.
I don't think it is over. It's possible the Bucks close them out, but it's quite possible the Suns win at Milwaukee. Look, why do I say that? I just saw them in the last two games, one at Milwaukee, one in Phoenix. I saw the game come down to the final play. I saw it come right down to the wire. I'm supposed to believe, because we talk about things like momentum in the press, the fans in the press do, even the players and the coaches do, that somehow that means that the Suns can't win. Momentum is one Phoenix play away from not existing right now in either games four or game five. The reason the Bucks are beating the Suns at this moment is because when it mattered most, they got great play from their best players. The Suns have not. Now, maybe you're right, Stephen A., and that means that, in fact, the Bucks are better. Because with the money on the line, Giannis comes through. Middleton comes through in this series. Jrue Holiday has now come through big time with his defense. And then the alley part of the U, right? I get it. Do I believe that Chris Paul and Devin Booker are incapable of that kind of play? No, I don't. Either one of those guys can take over a game. I've seen it in these playoffs. In these playoffs, they've done heroic things. They now need to do that. Someone has to do it, even if it is passing to an open Cam Johnson. But you got to make great plays at the end of these games. That's the reason Milwaukee right now is up 3-2. Instead of the series being over, you know, or vice versa, or the Suns up 3-2, could have easily been that way.
My only response to that, Max, is that I can say, honestly, I hope you're right, because I love Game 7s. Particularly, I just love a Game 7, and the thought of a Game 7 with Booker and CP3 and those boys back in Phoenix, I would absolutely positively love to see it. I just can't see it. They've lost three straight. Milwaukee clearly has the momentum. And as I told you Friday, that crowd, they show in the Deer Park, folks outside there. They talk about 12, 15,000. No, that's about 25,000 people out there, bro. They were packed to the hilt. And it's going to be absolute hysteria and pandemonium inside the Fiserv Forum tomorrow night. I mean, I just expect a sensational environment. And Giannis, true to form, called on the fans there, talked about how big this game is going to be, probably the biggest in franchise history, clearly the biggest in the last half century. Take all of those things into consideration with the way they've been playing basketball. The fact that they've played and engaged in bully ball, that they've attacked Phoenix's depth. Then you combine that with the fact that Middleton has closed. And Holiday has opened. He opens up. He's aggressive at the start of the games in terms of his perimeter shots and trying to make things happen, clearly trying to make things happen on the defensive end of the floor. You consider all of those things that we've been witnessing right now. I just feel like I find it very, very hard to believe that Phoenix is going to overcome this. Now, they can do it, and I hope they do, because, again, I would love a game seven. I just don't see them having blown the last three games and then somehow, some way, finding something inside themselves that they couldn't find over the last three games to pull this out. I just don't see it.
Well, look, in order for the Bucks to be here, it's not just that they had to make plays. In consecutive games, they had to make two of the most, these are among the most memorable plays in the history of the NBA now. That block by Giannis, and followed by the alley-oop, those are among the most memorable plays of all time in the finals.
Well,
in consecutive games in order to win. And one of those plays had to be combined with an all-time blunder by a normally clutch player in Chris Paul. So what I'm saying is, do the Bucks have that in them again? Because the Suns have shown they can hang right in there. And the Bucks, in order to beat them, need not only the greatest plays of all time, but in addition, the Suns messing up. That's going to happen three games in a row?
Well, Max, it doesn't have to happen three games in a row. It's already happened two games in a row. And the fact is, you can look at it and say, missed opportunities. Because usually when we're talking about the runner-up to a championship, most times, more often than not, in fact, it comes down to missed opportunities. And how many missed opportunities are you going to be granted before you're allowed to overcome them? That's really the issue in question here. This reeks of a championship that the Phoenix Suns are saying, damn, we had this moment here, we had this moment there, we had that moment there, and we didn't get it done. Let's keep in mind that block by Giannis, if DeAndre Ayton had laid it in or dunked it, that would have tied the score. That wasn't necessarily going to seal the deal for the Phoenix Suns. They still could have lost that game. Let's keep in mind that if Chris Paul doesn't foul Giannis Antetokounmpo on the alley-oop slam, Milwaukee is still up three. Let's keep in mind that when the strip took place and ultimately, Devin Booker was stripped by Jrue Holiday, Milwaukee was still up one. So the same thing that you could say about the Phoenix Suns and how they were so close, I could also point out how it's justified to look at Milwaukee and say, well, they were ahead, they were in position to win, and so it's apropos that they ended up winning the basketball game.
Well, that's fair.
Then when you combine all of that with the size, the depth, the athleticism, the fact that, an injury to Dario Saric, Chris Paul clearly is not 100%. They recognize that in his age and attrition and how they had Jrue Holiday pick him up 75 to 90 feet away from the basket just to make him work and work and work. And then you look at Phoenix's youth, because there's really no excuse. Even though they were a minus 19 with Cameron Payne on the floor, which speaks to the defensive liability that he may have been, the bottom line is he took two threes. He made them both. And I talked about it coming into this game. Find a way to get him the basketball. Offensively, he's not scared of the moment. Get it to him, and he's going to hit more shots than he misses. And unfortunately, Devin Booker and Chris Paul on several occasions looked him off and didn't find him when he was wide open. They could have gotten him the ball. They should have gotten him the ball. And I think he would have made positive things happen.
What you point out about the all-time great plays in consecutive games the Bucks made plus an all-time blunder by Chris Paul. What you point out about the fact that the Suns would have still had to do things, positively do things, do good things in order to win those games, that's true. Let's keep in mind also, Milwaukee came back from a 16-point deficit very early in the game. But they came back from a 16-point deficit, and part of the way they did that was by shooting the lights out. Like, they weren't missing. The Bucks don't normally shoot as well as they shot last night. So what I'm saying is a lot has had to go right for the Bucks and a lot has had to go wrong for the Suns.
Well,
for the Bucks to have the slimmest of margins here.
Let's also give John, real quick, Molly, let's give Giannis some credit in this regard. Giannis has showed himself to be a pretty damn good playmaker as well, because he's making the right passes and he knows his personnel and who to give the ball up to. And somehow, some way with the Phoenix Suns, damn, do you have to double all the time? Why are we doubling Giannis, 17 feet away from the basket? He made some of those shots Saturday night, but let him continue to make it. Challenge him to make those shots.
Downhill.
Because that's a low percentage, because you cannot leave Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton open. You can't do it.
All right, let's dive deeper and focus in on the players, guys. Time for a star watch. Giannis is averaging just over 32 points per game in the NBA Finals. That's the fourth most by any player through their first five Finals games after Rick Barry, Allen Iverson, and Dwayne Wade. Devin Booker has shined too, albeit in a losing effort. His 82 points in the last two games are the most by any player who lost consecutive games in an NBA Finals series. Chris Paul's play has been up and down. And now CP3 is on the verge of becoming the first player in NBA history to lose four best of seven series in which his team held a 2-0 lead. And in Game 5, the trio of Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday became the first trio each to record 25 points on 50% shooting. Did you get all that, Max Kellerman?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me this. Who's the most crucial player in this series moving forward, especially considering you think the Suns still have a shot?
The answer is Chris Paul. The answer is Chris Paul. Let's not overthink this one. Look, the issue with the Suns right now, why did they lose the last two games, really? You cut off the head of the snake, what happens? Chris Paul is the head of the snake. And Stephen A., you've pointed it out, whether it's lingering effects of COVID or a ligament in his hands, whatever it is, Chris Paul is not right. Right now, he's not right. With Isaiah Thomas talking about he needs to stop playing it safe, and not play not to lose but play to win. I don't, if Zeke sees that, I'm willing to say it's there. I don't see that. I see Chris Paul not himself. And this is such a legacy game for him. You know, he's so snake bit. If you look, I thought they would have won. They would have beaten Golden State, in my opinion, if he plays game seven in Houston. But he hasn't been healthy this time of year. When his team's needed him most, when he hasn't played great all the time. If Chris Paul plays the way he did in Game 6, here we are in another Game 6, in the previous round, he was not playing very well and his team wasn't functioning very well heading into that Game 6. Chris Paul played as good a game as can be played and they won. That's why they're in the finals. He needs to do that again. He is writing his script. Stephen A., this is the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. They are, oh, what are you going to say? His whole legacy swings, hangs in the balance? Yes. Yes, I am. Extremely high leverage games make you either greater in everyone's estimation as time goes on or not as great. Chris Paul's legacy, he'll be a great player anyway, but his legacy truly hangs in the balance here. Will he be a champion? Because he has a chance to be, but he has to have a monster game. He has to play great Chris Paul basketball in order to do it. He's the most important player.
Well, listen, I get where you're coming from. What I would, my retort to that would be this, Max. At some point in time, we have to just absorb and embrace the realization of a person being who they are, along with their limitations. Chris Paul is a 6-foot guard. Now, he should not have pushed Giannis on the alley-oop, but you know what? His instincts were wrong in this particular regard. And as a result, he was just hoping that Giannis misses. But we call Giannis the Greek Freak for a reason, because he does what he does in terms of his athleticism, his tenacity, the unstoppable tendencies that he has. And he's 6'11", who's gained 60 pounds of muscle since he entered the NBA. Chris Paul, he's a 6-foot guard. Okay, thinking about him dunking is an aberration, for crying out loud. Count on one hand how many times he's done it in his career. That's not who he is. He's incredibly limited in terms of his size and his athleticism. And so when we look at it from that perspective, and you think about the fact that he's going up against this team, the name that comes to my mind is Chris Middleton, because I'm looking at the Greek Freak. I'm looking at CP3 and Booker and those guys being who they are. Middleton is the person that we lamented was just inconsistent. But he had 40 in like game 3, I think. He had 29 Saturday night in game 5. Middleton has been absolutely spectacular. He's averaging 25-6 in this series on 44% shooting and 36% from three-point range. His mid-range game is as pure as it comes. He's looked absolutely spectacular for the most part during these NBA Finals series. And even though the numbers would speak to Giannis, who's averaging, 32-13 for this series on 61% shooting, although 16% from three-point range, that's not his game. Thank goodness he's recognized that. Middleton could be in the argument for NBA Finals MVP based on how he's performed and when he has performed, meaning the ability to close and seal the deal. That's how special he has been. And so when I look at CP3 against these guys, you're going up against these trees in Milwaukee. Jrue Holiday 6'6", Middleton 6'8", Giannis is 6'11", Lopez is 7 feet. P.J. Tucker's about 6'6", 6'7", and is a defensive stalwart. You know, you got Connaughton coming off the bench. That's the closest thing to CP3 size. Even Portis is a 6'9". And you just get to a point where you got to embrace some of the limitations that a guy has. Certainly, I look at CP3 and what he's lacking or what he hasn't been able to get done over these last three games. But I can't deny the fact that there comes a point in time where there's but so much you can expect when you see the other team do what they've been doing.
Well, okay. I hear you. I agree with that, actually. There's a reason that it almost never happens that a guy under 6'4 is the best player on a championship team. And when it does happen, there's usually a pretty good excuse, right? Kevin Love and Kyrie get hurt. Okay, Steph Curry is the best player on a championship team. But I will point out, Stephen A., that it has been done before. Was Isaiah and his Pistons going up against a Kareem who was still an MVP? No, right? Kareem's not there. Was Jordan too deep yet? No. So there was some daylight there, much like this year everyone got hurt and there was some daylight and these are the teams that made the finals as a result. But as you would say, what you going to do? Isaiah,
I agree.
Small point guard, what you going to do? So if we're talking about Chris Paul among the all-time greats, while he's still great, he's got to do this right now.
Well, we said, remember, we conceded he'd be top five if he won the championship. If he didn't, he wouldn't. So in other words, what we're saying is we're not going to elevate you. But it's not like we're going to subtract from the greatness that you've put on display. That's the difference here. And some guys, we'll look at them and we'll say, oh, hell no. You really, really fall. You really, really fall off that pedestal. You really hurt yourself. I don't think when you look at CP3 going up against this team and going up against some of the challenges that he had, particularly devoid of some of the weapons, with Saric going down and you guys not having the weapons necessary and not having the depth, the size, the athleticism, etc., I think those things will be realized, which is why I don't think it'll count as much against him as you're proclaiming it will. But in the end, what I will say to you is this. You bring up the Pistons. We have to stop that. Let's remember, these are the bad boys we're talking about here with Isaiah. Yes, Isaiah was the leader. He was the floor general. He was your point guard. He was absolutely spectacular. He could put up buckets anytime. Remember the 25 points in one quarter against the Lakers in an NBA Finals game on one leg, by the way.
Right,
on
he
one
was leg. Hurt. Okay. That's my point, Stephen A. He was also hurt and did it.
Wait a minute. But I'm saying CP3, no one's ever confused CP3 for being Isaiah. The only person that came close to that was you because you thought John Stockton was comparable to Isaiah. And I'm here to tell you that just wasn't true. Then no, it's not true. It's just not true.
I think they're bunched very close.
But if you look at the Pistons, Sally, Lambert, Mahorn, James Edwards, Rodman. I mean, these guys had size. They had physicality. They had athleticism. They were rough and rugged. They beat you up. The rules were different.
It's a different style, but Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton,
no,
they got better.
No.
You talk about Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, they got a team.
No. I'm saying they have a team, Max, but against this Milwaukee team, clearly they have a decisive edge in terms of size, depth, and athleticism over Phoenix. That is clear. That was not the case against anybody going against the bad boys. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of the
Isaiah had more help.
They have the first pick in the draft next week. Detroit basketball. Here we go. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Dame time. Let's go. Big time players make big time plays in big time moments. That is Damian Lillard. He's the Blazers franchise leader in 50-point games and three-pointers. Dame's 12 50-point games are tied with LeBron for the seventh most in NBA history. And as far as points and minutes, only Hall of Famer Clyde Drexler has more in Portland's franchise history. Here's Lillard on his future in Portland.
We're in the playoffs every year. We got a great environment. We in a great city. You know, we have great fans. It's a lot of positives, you know, but I just think we've reached that point where it's like, okay, but it's not enough. Do we actually want to win it all? Right now, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. What I can say is my intentions and my heart has always been set on being in the Trailblazers uniform for my entire career. But I think over time, you want to win it all. You know what I'm saying? And I want to win it all in a Trailblazers uniform. But we all have to be making strides toward that.
Dame transparent there in that interview, Stephen A. What should the Blazers do with Lillard?
Well, they should trade him. Me personally, I think they should trade him because I think that he is a superstar. I don't think his stock has ever been higher. And I don't think the Blazers have ever been in a position to get as much as they could for him at this particular moment in time. Now, I will openly confess to you that I am incredibly biased. There is no player that I have wanted in New York more than Damian Lillard. I'm talking about a closer. I'm talking about a sniper and a marksman extraordinaire. I'm talking about a guy that has the swag that is made for New York City. Now, in face value, it doesn't look like they would have the assets for him. Obviously, with Julius Randle and R.J. Barrett as the cornerstones of your franchise, what do you have to offer? I would remind everybody that the New York Knicks are expected to have in excess of $70 million in cap space. Okay, they can absorb his salary. I would give them anything they wanted. I would give them Barrett. I would give them Randle. I would give them Obi Toppin. I would give them Mitchell Robinson. I would give them Emmanuel Quickley. I would give them not one, not two, but three first-round picks. I would give the Portland Trail Blazers all that in a bag of chips just to get Damian Lillard in New York City. That's how badly I would want him if I am the New York Knicks. And for those that think that Damian Lillard would it ever want to be a New York Knick? I'm here to tell you, he'd rather be a New York Knick than a Los Angeles Laker. He'd rather be in the New York market than the L.A. market. He ain't interested in joining no super team. And more importantly than that, you know, his mentality would likely be, I could get dudes to come and play with me if I were in New York City. But there are other options. Dallas has to move Porzingis. You could put him in Dallas with Luka Doncic, if at all possible. There are a plethora of other options, and I understand that. I'm just talking about what my preference would be because I haven't spoken to him about this at this particular moment in time. But in the end, what it comes down to is this. If you are the Portland Trail Blazers, you've had him and C.J. McCollum together for years. I've got a lot of love for C.J. McCollum. I think that he's a big-time baller, but I have told him and Damian Lillard to their face over the years, which they both would confirm to anybody who asked, that I don't believe those two should remain together. I think they've had their chance. I think that, unfortunately, with what both of them bring to the table, they're an elite backcourt max who could score on anybody. But defensively, it could be a liability, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I would trade one of them to use them to get the assets necessary to pair with the other. I've been on the record, Max. I wouldn't want, Ben Simmons going there. I would love for Philly to get their hands on Damian Lillard, but I'm not sure Ben Simmons would work in Portland. I have been on the record, Max. I've stated this publicly. I would even consider trading Anthony Davis from the Los Angeles Lakers to get Damian Lillard with LeBron James, because this season, Anthony Davis missed more games, or just as many games, as Damian Lillard missed his entire career. I would actually consider that if I were Portland and I were the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, good luck selling Portland to AD. Here's the thing. Portland's in the Pacific Northwest. It's tucked away. The games start late. It's not a huge cosmopolitan area. It's not a warm weather state, and it's not a no income tax state. No one's going to want to play there. That's the problem. Free agents are looking for warm weather, no income tax state, or and of course they're looking for great teams. If Portland had an amazing team, that would be different, but truly juggernaut type teams. Or they're looking for major cosmopolitan areas where they feel like they can broadcast their brand and become global icons in a way to set them out up to be billionaires, you know. None of that's Portland. So as long as Damian Lillard's in Portland, he's stuck in neutral. We've seen that. But one of the reasons for that is, as great as he is, Stephen A., you keep talking about shorter players. I agree with you about it, by the way. I just think, well, that's basketball. If you're shorter, it counts against you. It's almost never has a player under 6'4 been the best player on a championship team. And when they have, Steph Curry in 2015, there's always a reason for it. The other team had major injuries, something like that. So Lillard is, at best, probably the second best player on a championship team. The problem is, he's a top dozen player. There aren't that many guys as good as him. So when I brought up Philadelphia the other day, Stephen A., it's because Embiid, there's a guy. Embiid and Lillard, maybe you can win a championship. Maybe. Things have to still go right. Can't get injured. You need help. And you have to hope that Brooklyn doesn't just stay healthy. But maybe. Otherwise, how many guys are there? LeBron, you bring up the Lakers, you're right. Kawhi. KD, but, they're already set, it looks like, over there. Giannis, but he's pretty well set up. There aren't that many guys. Luka, you brought up. Harden is with KD. Jokic. If Lillard went to a place like Denver and they held on to Jokic and Murray, there you go. But that's how hard it is to win a championship in a normal season. This is not a normal season with all the injuries. The Knicks, if they traded everything they had for him, Stephen A., he'd be in the same position he is in Portland, except that he would be able to sell New York to other superstars. But that's what he would have to do. Maybe a young guy on his way up who hits the market. There are guys like, obviously, Zion and Ja, or guys who are more advanced like Tatum or Donovan Mitchell or Devin Booker or someone like that. But that's what it would take. Lillard plus another dude at least as good as him, if not better, and the right situation. And then maybe you win a championship. It ain't easy.
Well, listen, it's going to be easier in the East than it is in the West. That's number one. Number two, unlike Portland, as you articulated, in New York and other places, he'd be able to attract people to want to come and play with him. Because I think that if he were in the right market, you'd see people clamoring to play with Damian Lillard. Make no mistake about that. So we can't ignore that. And I think that ultimately, if you're the Portland Trailblazers, you got to ask yourself what you're trying to do here. Are you trying to be respectable enough where you have a superstar that in the local market is so attractive that people are going to come out and clamor to see you, but you don't necessarily position yourself to compete for a championship since you've been bounced out in the first round four times in the last 5 years? Or do you reach the conclusion that I think is somewhat obvious that C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard together don't work on a championship level? They'll work to win you games, to be competitive, et cetera, et cetera. But both of them deserve, Damian Lillard more so than C.J. McCollum, but both of them deserve to be the face of their respective franchises, or for you to at least make a deal that would complement their styles of play even more so. When I bring up an Anthony Davis, why? Because if you're the Portland Trailblazers, everything else you have on the perimeter, with the acquisition of Powell coming to that team, with Covington still on that team, with Carmelo Anthony still on that team, with C.J. McCollum there as well, along with some other cats, some of the young cats that they've got. You get a true big to join Nurkic, you could make some noise. You're Damian Lillard. If you go to a different place where you've got a superstar like a LeBron James, but you're complimenting him, you could do some things. If you go to New York, you can attract dudes to that bigger market to compete with KD, Kyrie, and James Harden in Brooklyn. Damian Lillard would be plastered all over Broadway with the kind of game that he has and what he brings to the table. He'd be the marketing attraction in the city of New York without question. These are the kind of things I think he should think about. And Portland should think about it to make sure they get as much for him as possible.
Kyrie for Damian Lillard straight up?
Say what?
Kyrie for Damian Lillard straight
up. Kyrie?
Yep.
Well, if I'm Portland, I would never do that. I couldn't rely on Kyrie.
But if you're Brooklyn?
I thought you were talking about the New York Knicks when you...
I'm talking about the New York Knicks.
Of course you are.
I ain't thinking about no damn Brooklyn Nets.
Who has the stuff to go get them? You have to bring it to get it. I don't know what the Knicks give up to go get Damian Lillard.
I just told you. I give him everything plus the 3 first-round picks.
I guess.
Max wants the super team. All right, Dame has the most points in clutch time, 162 this season. He's unreal. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
In a sport that is predominantly black, the representation is abysmal amongst the positions of leadership. The regular season ended with 7 black coaches out of 30. But with head coaching openings in 2021, there was an opportunity for change, and progress appears to be underway because 7 of those hires have gone to black head coaches, with the lone exception being Rick Carlisle returning to his old stomping grounds in Indiana. Nate McMillan had the interim tag removed after taking over midseason, and Willie Green is expected to take over the Pelicans gig following the NBA Finals. Stephen A., I'll start with you. What is the significance of 7 black coaches being hired?
Well, I think it's incredibly significant, obviously. I don't know of anybody that has pushed this narrative more than me as it pertains to African-Americans needing the opportunities to be head coaches in the National Basketball Association. Obviously, there's more desperate need when it comes to the National Football Leagues, especially college football, which is an absolute joke. The list goes on and on, but as it pertains to the National Basketball Association, a league that's over 75% black, you would think that the paucity of opportunities that were being accorded to these guys would have hit the radar for folks long before I had to get on the air and literally go to hell off about it. What I'm touched by and what I love about all of this right now is that none of these are bad job opportunities. Historically, a lot of times when we find African Americans getting some of these positions, it's for a franchise that's on a path to nowhere. They're moribund, they're pathetic, and these guys are asked to come in and inherit these jobs and, you know, build some kind of foundation. And then when it's time to springboard from there, they're nowhere to be found because they're let go by folks. And as a result, it is what it is. That's not the case here. We saw the job that Nate McMillan did. They could have easily went the route of a white individual when Lloyd Pierce got let go. But they elevated Nate McMillan, and look at the job that he did in getting Atlanta to the conference finals. We see Udoka, who's paid his dues and has been around for a long time, getting the Boston job with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. That is not a shabby job. Jason Kidd getting the job in Dallas. That's not a shabby job. Chauncey Billups, with or without Damian Lillard, that is not a shabby job. Wes Unseld Jr., you know something? Your dad won a championship with this franchise and was an NBA Finals MVP in 78 to 79, I believe. We all know the greatness of Wes Unseld. This is his son, who was an assistant there and worked there for years and has toiled the terrain of, you know, being on the sidelines for an NBA franchise. And here he is now, taking over a Wizards franchise with Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal as backcourt mates in the Eastern Conference. That is not a shabby job. Willie Green with Zion Williamson, that is not a shabby job. And so I look at it from that perspective, and I'm saying it's not just the fact that they got jobs. They have an opportunity to make something of themselves based on the franchise they've inherited as a head coach. This is what I would qualify as a legitimate coaching opportunity, a legitimate opportunity to show who you are, what you bring to the table, and what you're worth. And I think the NBA as a whole should be applauded for really stepping up and making sure that something like this happened. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think it's a beautiful day. And I think that we should all be incredibly proud of the opportunities that these guys have. Now, it's up to them to make the most of it. And whatever happens, happens. But at least they got a legitimate bona fide opportunity as opposed to a joke of an opportunity where we see the end before they even arrived. That's not the case here with these jobs, and I'm very, very happy for all of the people that got them.
Justice postponed is justice denied. So this idea, I think, well, it's about time and eventually things naturally work themselves out, right? This doesn't happen just because people have finally become enlightened. Without a lot of struggle, without a lot of people shining a light on it, on the fact that percentage of African-American players in the NBA versus the percentage of people in leadership positions, front office, coach, is out of whack. Anyone noticing that? And Stephen A., you should not have to say it about yourself, so let me give you your flowers on this, okay? No one has been more vocal about it, nor has had a bigger platform, and you have frequently turned conversations on this show and debates on this show that are tangentially related to this issue or not directly about the issue. You have refocused the conversation consistently, gratuitously, to discuss the lack of, or paucity, as you would put it, of African-American coaches in the NBA. And others have also been vocal about it, including not just in the media, but some players, fans. Culturally, people are more aware, and as a result, or let me put it another way, take all that effort away. Do you think 7 of 8 hires would be African-American coaches? Be honest.
No.
Why hasn't it been in the past? Hasn't been in the past. Maybe if there were 8 jobs and you got 2 African-American hires, you go, oh, look at that. They hired a couple of black guys, right? Well, there were 8 jobs, but at least 2 were African-American. No, 7 of 8. That does not happen by accident. It does not happen just merely out of some enlightened position that someone woke up one day or the goodness of their heart. They realize, wait a minute, something's wrong here. It happens from constant pressure from people, foremost among them, Stephen A., I think you, in the media. And so I'd like to say that about you now in light of this today, so you don't have to say it about yourself.
Well, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to stop because I got to tell you, you know, listen, every coach, and 50% of the coaches in the NBA don't have to be black. You know, just because the league is 75% black doesn't mean that 75% of the coaches should be black. And I understand that. And there are a lot of white individuals who do outstanding jobs. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, the litmus test for success and what have you isn't consistent a lot of times when you look at African-American coaches, which brings me to my next thing. And that's, you know, blacks in front office positions. Because when I look at the whole analytics movement and what have you, I'm going to tell you what I believe about that. And I understand that you're a fan of analytics to some degree. And Max, believe it or not, so am I. Numbers has its place. It shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. It shouldn't replace the eye test. It shouldn't replace what some of the nuances that come with evaluating what an organization is, what it should look like, and what players playing under those regimes, how they perform, et cetera, et cetera. But what I will say is this. When you have analytics, what transpires, this is how I view analytics, Max. It's about numbers. And a lot of times you have owners that don't necessarily know nor understand the game to the degree that you would like. but they damn sure know numbers. And so as a result, if you're an analytics dude and you could come to an owner with a speaking a language that they understand, they're more receptive to you. They embrace you a bit more. And as a result, you get the job, and then you hire people under you as scouts, as player personnel directors, et cetera, et cetera, as GMs. The list goes on, hovering, you know, as you're hovering over them, they're directly under you as subordinates, and blacks have been squeezed out of that as well. And so for me, what I look at it, and I'm not talking about just coaches. Mm-hmm. Coaches was one element, but I also think that, you know what, when you're an executive, you're the leader of a franchise, you're also the leader of men. And there are African Americans that can do that too. And by the way, I don't want to stop there, Molly. There are women coaching in the NBA. They should be considered for head coaching jobs as well.
Absolutely.
They should be considered for front office positions as well. It shouldn't just be dominated by white males.
There are even African American women who know analytics.
That's right.
Right. Well, your police didn't fall on deaf ears, Stephen A., because there's now 13 black head coaches in the NBA.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Electric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Electric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.